thanks for waking up with WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us. We got a busy week planned that we'll always have, at least in the plans, is Mr. Rob Center, our fabulous producer. Matt Catrillo's got the day off. Chris Iulios over at the editor's desk, so we appreciate that, or soon will be. And then, of course, I'm here on WKOK Sunrise, so we appreciate that. In the studio with us now, Dave Owens is back. He's from Owens and Owens Farm out in the Sunbury area, organic farm. I guess the lambing is done out there, right? So all the baby lambs are had.
Yes, Mark. Good morning. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, thanks for coming in. Owens Farm is a tourism farm. Agritourism, is that the right way to describe what happens there?
Yeah, I mean, we do raise lamb, pork, chicken, turkey. We do have honeybees, as we'll be talking about. But a large part of what we do is education. I think it's so important just to give back to all the people that we learn from. So we do have organized tours, and those are listed on our website.
Which is?
OwensFarm.com.
All right, so you want folks to check that. Yeah, standard spelling of Owens, O-W-E-N-S, farm.com, if folks want to check that. All right, we are running a commercial bee operation, so tell us tell us about that, please.
Yeah, my operation started about 20 years ago. My neighbor, actually, at the time I was living in New Hampshire, gave me some bees because he was concerned I was planting fruit trees, and I think his wife at the time didn't want him to have so many beehives. So he actually gave me a hive, gave me bees, and got me started. And I think other than that, I probably wouldn't have thought about it. But I was mostly interested in growing fruit at that time. And, you know, at this point, bees are much more important to me than my fruit trees, which I still have. They're just a fascinating, very interesting hobby or sideline for me. I sell honey, and I can watch all of nature's dramas in my hive. Everything that's going on in the hive reflects the state of our environment locally, and what I'm seeing in the hive is the health of the ecosystem, really.
Describe the bees, what they do, some different kind of bees. I think people are generally fascinated when they hear about the life of bees.
Yeah, and that's true. We get a lot of visitors from, say, the city, from New York City. They can come out to Sunbury. It's only, you know, half a day's drive to get there. And we host them. We do overnights. And some of these folks don't really know where honey comes from. They have, you know, really no idea that the bees are actually taking nectar from flowers within a, like, 1 to 2 mile radius from around our farm. They're drying that nectar down to about a 18% moisture level. When it comes in, it's about, you know, 80% moisture. So they're doing a lot of work inside the hive that you're not seeing, converting that floral substance that we can smell in the flowers into something that we can actually taste. It's kind of mind-boggling that they do it so well and so efficiently.
Now, their goal is to come up with sufficient nectar, although distilled down to what we call honey.
That's true.
And have sufficient stores for the winter.
Yeah, a honeybee colony in Pennsylvania requires, I would say, about 50 pounds or more of stored honey in the colony. Otherwise, it's going to starve. We have no flowers after, you know, October into November. And then the first thing that comes up is probably, you know, crocus or maple pollen in late March, if we're lucky, or April.
And so do you feed your bees to supplement the honey production?
Yeah, in previous years, I have not. In later years, I have. Most recent years, I have to feed colonies that are on a borderline of being starving or about to starve. So in the late winter, I'll get in there and feed them if they need it. I'd much rather feed bees than to have them die.
What does one feed a bee?
Well, it depends. In the fall going into winter, you need to feed them a heavy sugar syrup, so a 2-to-1 sugar syrup that you can mix up. And they can dry that down fairly quickly and cap that. But after fall and winter sets in, you really need to feed them just a dry fondant or a sugar.
And my lovely bride and I think some folks know this, have a beehive in our backyard just as a hobby. We only extract a little bit of honey from it, but we're forever monitoring, making sure that there's sufficient honey throughout the winter, and then feeding a fondant to them is sort of part of what we do. Okay, so that's a quick glance at your bee operation. How many hives do you have at your house or at the farm?
Yeah, I have 15 currently. I mean, I'm trying to stay within about a dozen hives, because more than that, it just takes too long for me to go around with all my other farm chores to do.
So in the dead of summer, what does hive maintenance entail?
Well, this summer right now, we're looking at a decline of nectar sources, because the flowers, like tree fruits and things like that, they're all long gone. So we may have some vegetables. We may have some summer flowers coming in, the pasture, chicory and ragweed and things like that. And there's not a lot for them to do. So we need to look at the hive, assess it to see if we can take some honey off and just be very conservative. You know, leave them enough so they can get through a dearth that might be coming up, which is kind of the time period between 4th of July and September. I look at it usually in our part of central Pennsylvania. That's when we just have kind of a desert of nectar coming in. The clover starts to die out. I don't know if you see it in your lawn. The white clover just starts to crinkle up and dry up, and the bees really can't make any nectar from that clover that's being dried out in the hot sun.
Yeah, you have a workshop this Sunday. What is your topic of conversation Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday we're going to look at how we harvest honey from the hives. So we're going to take frames of honey. We're going to harvest them, show you what we do and to extract that honey from the hive. We're going to sample different honeys. I've been traveling, and I usually pick up honey from other places that I've gone to sort of remember what I've seen and then what the nectar tastes like or the honey tastes like from those different places. So we'll sample honey from around the world as well as my honey. And we're going to look at a hive up close as well and get right into it.
All right. So that's an opportunity for folks. It's a $15 workshop, probably 2 or 3 hours or so. And it's this Sunday, 1:30 p.m. at Owens Farm.
Again, 3 p.m.
It starts at 3 p.m.?
Yes.
It begins at 3 p.m. All right, fabulous. All right, and Owens Farm is outside Sunbury. Is that Mile Hill Road?
We're on Mile Post Road. We're about halfway between Riverside and Sunbury, so we're on the kind of the riverside of that stretch.
Right, the riverside side, you could say. Okay. Now, you have spent some time going around the world. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I mean, my latest trip is to Slovenia because it's really a beekeeping hotspot. But I have been talking to beekeepers from UK and Germany and Canada, and of course in the US, we have things like Eastern Apiculture Society, where all the beekeepers in the eastern part of the United States get together, and that's been a lot of fun. I've done that a few times. But the latest trip, Slovenia is a country that's about the size of New Jersey, so you can drive the whole country in a few hours. And it has the highest proportion of beekeepers per capita of any place in the world. So out of 2 million people who live there, about one in every 200 is a beekeeper. So there's just beekeepers everywhere you go.
And why is that?
I think it's they have a long tradition of education and agriculture. One of the things that happened during their history was the Habsburg Empire. Empress Maria Theresa was very interested in bees and just education in general, but especially agricultural education. And she happened to have a very knowledgeable beekeeper in her castle that was Slovenian. And so he was able to get her ear and get some funding, and it just, things took off. And this was actually before Langstroth had invented the beehive that we have today in Pennsylvania, by the way. So as that was taking place in the 18th century, the Slovenian hive design and hive plans were also taking shape across the Atlantic.
And that's when we used to see beehives sort of shaped like an upside-down basket, right, where the bees would form their own comb and that sort of thing?
Yeah, the designs that were invented in the 18th century really changed beekeeping as we know it. We used to destroy the comb in order, and destroy the bees, by the way, to get at the honey. And we no longer do that because of these inventions that came about at that time period.
All right. So did you take education to Slovenia, or were you hoping to come back with more knowledge, or both?
Yeah, my trip was really just to see how things are done there. And they definitely have a different model of beekeeping. They use something called an AZ hive, which I had never really seen up close. I mean, you can see these AZ hives in YouTube and other places, but to talk to actual beekeepers who are using them, I'm considering getting some AZ hives to evaluate them. I do have top bar hives and Langstroth hives, and I really enjoy looking at the different hive technologies.
And some would be more productive than other, might be a one way to look at it?
Yeah, actually, the Langstroth is probably renowned for being very highly productive, high yields of honey. But the AZ hive solves some things that really trouble me as a heading into my retirement years. I'm not there yet, but I'm looking at not lifting those heavy boxes so much. So the top bar hive designs are really nice for that. And this AZ hive, if you picture a kitchen cabinet on a wall, that's an AZ hive. It's really mounted up. You don't have to stoop down. You just open the door, and in that door of that kitchen cabinet, the cabinet is facing out. There's a building wall, and the bees actually fly out through the building, through the cabinet outside, and you're looking at the back of the hive, and you're just pulling frames from the back of their hive. So you're never lifting a box. You're only lifting, you know, 3 or 4 pounds at the most.
At a time. Well, yeah, you mentioned some hives can be full of 50 pounds of bees, 50 pounds of hive or more, plus the frame itself has a little bit of weight, so that you're talking about a heavy thing, and generally lifting that is something that can be done. You were there as part of an what you called an API tour, API as an apiary tour?
Yes, Slovenia. So it's a fascinating country. It looks a little bit like Switzerland, mixed with Italian Riviera seaside, and then for great measure, it looks like French Provence with all these little European villages. And the whole country is based on just keeping things eco-friendly and green. Really, that's their mantra, is to keep the green hills of Slovenia going strong. So they're very interested in sustainable beekeeping. They don't allow importation of any bees. They have a bee there that's indigenous that was there longer than them. It's called the Carniolan bee, and that's really the only type of bee that is used in Slovenia. They protect it, and they, will fine you if you destroy their native bees. So that's one thing they do correctly is, they support beekeeping and bees very, very well, I think.
Great. So, so if folks want to attend your workshop, it's this weekend, 3 p.m. at Owens Farm along Mile Post Road outside Sunbury, about midway, really, between Sunbury and Riverside, and owensfarm.com, the place to go. What is the status of colony collapse disorder? We read and hear a lot about that.
Yeah, colony collapse disorder was sort of a term invented by Dave Hackenberg back in, I believe it was 2006. And he's a Pennsylvania beekeeper. He was affected by this mysterious and phenomenon where the bees would just kind of fly away out of the hive. They would leave very little stores or other bees, baby bees, behind. The whole hive would just leave, and they were never found again. So it was sort of a new phenomenon, and we still don't know scientifically what the exact cause, and we may never know. It may be just a multiple of factors that are causing a CCD or colony collapse. I personally have never witnessed it in my operations, so I can't really speak to that.
All right, but so your beehives are fine, right?
Yes.
Good and thriving. You were right in the middle of a sentence. What were you going to say?
Yeah, so colony collapse is interesting that it came out about at that time frame about 10, 12 years ago, because at that time we were looking at bees and looking at bee health issues in my club. I had joined a club about 5 years prior, but, I could see that our clubs were getting older. People were kind of just getting not interested in bees anymore. They had other worries, and we weren't getting a lot of new members, and that really touched a nerve in the public psyche, and we've had an explosion of interest in honeybees since that time, and I think that's, the golden or the silver lining of colony collapse.